questions haunt every life, writes Andy Crouch. The first, what are we meant to be? The second, why are we so far from what we're meant to be? Hello and welcome to Restoring the Soul, a podcast dedicated to helping you close the gap from what you're meant to be and what keeps you from being all that. I'm your producer, Brian Beatty, and we're rounding the final turn in this fantastic five-part series of discussions between Michael and Restoring the Soul's resident expert on the Enneagram, Kelly Gray. Now, the goal of these podcasts is to show how understanding the Enneagram can strengthen your marriage or intimate relationship. Now, this episode, Michael and Kelly will discuss how couples can embrace their differences, even to the point of blessing each other, in order to grow closer together and develop greater empathy and humility. And that by studying the Enneagram, it can help couples put more language to deep drives, desires, and needs that develop in their relationship. It's another fascinating conversation that I hope you'll enjoy. Now, be sure to download our previous episodes and also subscribe to the podcast so you'll always receive the latest conversations, which normally release on Thursday mornings in the U.S. So thanks again for taking part in this series of podcasts, whose goal is to open up brand new pathways for intimacy and connectedness. And now here's your host, Michael John Cusick.
So thank you, Brian Beatty, our producer and engineer. It is Michael, and welcome to another episode of Restoring the Soul. I'm here with Kelly Gray in the studio, continuing our series on the Enneagram and marriage. And we hope that so far this has been helpful to you, whether you are just in an intimate relationship or whether you are married. This is episode number 4, and today we're going to be talking about how knowing the Enneagram will help you to celebrate and bless the differences in marriage. So, Kelly, what do you have to say about this in your Enneagram wisdom?
So, with this one, I was really kind of thinking on the question about, or just on the really normal issue of all of us dreaming about or kind of fantasizing about what would it be like if my partner had the exact same strengths that I have. With all these marriages that I work with, I'll just so often hear somebody say, if he was just as meticulous as I am, we wouldn't have these problems. If she were as creative as I am, we wouldn't have these problems. And so this wishing that our spouse was different from what they are, and just how that can lead to more of those kind of low level, and, you know, I was talking about that. I used that term last time. Another word I've had for that is just petty, kind of when we get stuck in petty fights or kind of ego-y kind of fights. I feel like if we could deal with that issue of our, just the ways that we are different and our spouse is just different from us, it could keep us out of some more of those kind of crummy little fights.
And one of the first places that my mind goes to is how in friendships, we tend to gravitate toward people that are like us, that mm-hmm. share not just our beliefs, but our ways of being, even our interests. And not all friends, you know, probably have the same Enneagram number or personality type, but mm-hmm. marriage is not always like that. And oftentimes there's almost the opposite person that we're attracted to. So this idea of celebrating or blessing differences, I think, is really important to look at.
Yeah, isn't that funny that so often in marriage, the whole opposites attract thing is what comes up. And so we're drawn to somebody who has some traits that we think, oh my gosh, I need that so badly in my life. Okay, I feel awesome about you. Let's get married. And then as time goes on, you start to hate some of those very traits that drew you to that person.
Nobody is sitting around trying to invent a dating app where you can program in information that this person's characteristics are exactly opposite of mine, and all of their traits push my buttons and make me feel bad about myself and them. Nobody is inventing that app because nobody likes, at least initially, the way that differences have the potential to push our buttons. But you are here to talk about how differences can actually be a blessing and can be celebrated. And I think that as you're talking about this, there are things that are just beyond the obvious, you know, like, well, he's good at changing the oil or fixing a carburetor, and I'm good at baking a casserole.
Yeah, totally. And then there's this thing that Christians do in marriage, not that all of our listeners are Christians, but a lot of them are, where they might be feeling these negative feelings about their spouse, and they'll think, okay, I'm being bad. I'm not supposed to feel those feelings. I'm going to stuff those down, and I'm going to try to just, you know, be positive about our differences. And so the fun therapy work that I would love to do, and what I have done with myself, what I do with other people, is to just help them turn and face those differences and like, let's name them. Say, I am quieter than you are. You are more extroverted, more loud. You like more activity than I do. So if that's the difference that a couple has, instead of just trying so hard to put up with it, to turn and face it and name it. And I'd say, you know, maybe name it with your spouse, but more often I'd say name it with a safe person that loves you, loves your spouse, or a good shrink, a good therapist could be great to chat with about that, talk to you about that. But it's more about it's naming what you don't like so that you can grieve it. That really helps usher in the grieving process, which grieving is something that we should totally do another podcast on a whole different time. But grieving is basically saying something has happened that I did not want to have happen, and I cannot change this or fix this. And you can really kind of get stuck in that place of saying, oh, I'm just so sad this happened. I wish we didn't have these differences. But if you name it and own it, and you feel your feelings around it, you face it, you see what you're feeling in your body around it, it really, that helps you come to the far more open, creative place of acceptance of your partner. So you're not telling yourself you're bad for feeling negative feelings. You're owning them, naming them. I have some dissatisfactions. I'm hurting in my marriage over these differences we have. When you can have a little bit more, when acceptance can start to come up inside of you, then you get more creative about, okay, now I can see a little bit more of what's positive in here, and it can lead you to actually being able to enjoy or celebrate, or even, like, I mean this in the best sense, but like take advantage of the fact that your partner has these different strengths that you have. But you can get more creative after you've done a little bit of grief work around it.
So with those differences, when you say take advantage, there's a way in which you can use the marriage itself and use this other person, again, use in quotes, mm-hmm. as a way of complementing, making up the difference, meeting needs for one another.
Yeah, totally.
I have Absolutely. A question. You talked about naming it, mm-hmm. and I'm a two, mm-hmm. and I think for a lot of my relationship with Julianne, as a two, I tend to self-sacrifice, and I have either not acknowledged or named my own differences, or I have given them up. Mm. So it sounds like for some people, there may be a need to not just name it between the two, but what are the ways that I'm different? Because people lose themselves or melt into the other, and they lose their identity. Have you seen that?
Absolutely. Well, I was thinking about a couple, and I've seen lots of couples that were fours married to sevens. And so for people who know the Enneagram, they would know that essentially that's like a very deep person marrying a very fun-seeking person who is less comfortable going to the depths. They certainly all, everyone has depths, but the seven is a little bit more famously less interested in those depths. So for the four to name, I'm deep and I love to feel really seen, and I like to have really long conversations. And for the seven to name, I really like to play, and I really like to focus on all the positive and the fun parts of life. When they can name that and then say, okay, now what do we do?
We have a really deep conversation at Disney World.
Oh, what a great idea.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, the solutions, I mean, so the creativity that can come from this work of naming and blessing the differences that you have, the creativity is literally endless.
So I'll be serious now. What would an example of the four and the seven be like as you've worked with people?
So you mean like where they come to?
Yeah, how they navigate the difference of I want to have a deep conversation all the time and the other person wants to play, seek adventure, and to not feel a lot of deep things.
What I have found with all of my fours, and I've told you that in 2018 I looked at my caseload and I had 17 fours actively on my caseload. So God was teaching me so much about the spirit and the configuration of the fours. What I found with the fours in the couples that I was seeing was if they just knew that they were going to have a regular invitation to share their hearts completely and that their partner wasn't going to drop the ball on that, and if it did have to get postponed, it would get rescheduled and picked up, you know, immediately, that was taken very seriously, then that four could relax so much easier. Because it's kind of like thinking you're never going to have access to the bathroom again. And so it's like, oh my God, I got to pee so bad. Sorry. And I got to just get in there. I got to go. But if you know your turn is going to come at this really regular interval, you can really relax a whole lot more. Sorry, I have so many pee and poop analogies for some reason in therapy.
That,
really
we will have to edit out most of this for those that are averse to any kind of bathroom references.
Sorry. I've got
but
a
of course,
part.
It's part of incarnation. We can theologically justify it. So what also popped into my head, and these are of course unscripted conversations, is the idea that if we see differences as a threat, there's this idea that I'm not going to get what I need because they are different. And if they would be like me, then I could get my needs met. And you're suggesting that part of the creative way of navigating this is finding a way for both people to be honored in how they are wired.
Yeah. And so studying the Enneagram helps you put more language with what your deep, you know, what your deep drives, desires, kind of your, and your most itchy needs are going to be closer to the surface. And when you study those things, it really allows you to say, okay, you get to be a seven and I get to be a four. How do we, and we love each other dearly. And so how do we both get our needs met? How do we both get a turn here instead of it just being this behind the scenes, always kind of fighting and warring and you know, you got your turn last time, it's my turn now. Instead it's making a much broader place for both people to get their needs met. I tell people, I'm like, what's the hurry? We're always hurrying things up so much. And when our fight or flight, when the limbic system gets involved and we're in that fight or flight place, we think, I have to get all these words out right now and I have to be understood right this second. But we don't have to listen to that urgency. You can take a deep breath and slow it down and say, there's room for both of us to show up here.
So how have you seen, as people press into this idea of blessing and celebrating differences, what does this require of people in terms of change and owning their own junk?
Yeah, a lot. So the path of humility and the path of growth. And that path of saying, you know, always, I'm always going to be learning. I'm never going to have this thing totally in the bag. If I'm married to this infinitely, intricately complex human being, I'm going to have to keep a posture of curiosity, asking questions, and then checking back in with one another. Like we talked about, I think it was our second recording, but we don't get to give out our own grades on how well we're doing in being an expert on our spouse.
Give me a couple other examples of how you've seen couples with different numbers be able to celebrate that difference.
It's going to look a lot of different ways, but there's going to be a heart behind it that has been able to. So going on a journey of really learning to accept your spouse as they are, your partner as they are, you're going to have this attitude towards them of, that's how they are. That's how that's her way. That's his way. That's how they do things. So there's going to be this acceptance around. So like sevens are just kind of on my mind today, but I mean, so I'll know couples where the adventure-seeking seven has married a five, and they've just learned that he is going to need to go four-wheeling in his Jeep on the weekends. And when she needs a weekend alone, they plan ahead for it, and she goes and she has a weekend literally in a hotel by herself. This is a real couple. But then there will be other needs for kind of downtime with family, and he definitely provides that. He steps up to do that for her. And then she in turn says, okay, go to the mountains. And I think he had to do some grieving around her not necessarily wanting to be an adventure buddy. It's not her favorite thing to bounce in a four-wheel drive vehicle for 3 hours on a Saturday afternoon. She's going to be reading and taking a nap. And learning to accept each other, learning to grieve. Okay, I did not marry myself here. We're a seven and a five. And kind of walk through some of those initial feelings, not stuff them down or suppress them, which I'm sure they did try that, and it just didn't work. And so moving towards the acceptance of it all, they have created a system that works where they can be happy for each other and then meet back up at the end of it and share how they were enriched by those.
You're really talking about differentiation and individuation.
Yes, I am.
of having a solid self apart from your spouse. And my experience has been in a lot of Christian marriages that really have a fear of being separate, that you're encouraging this separateness, not as go find yourself, mm-hmm. but go be yourself. Mm-hmm. And when there's a separateness, then you can come back together in a way where the oneness can actually be more profound.
Total. I love that point, because God did make us, he didn't make us Siamese twins. And even Siamese twins have separate souls and will have different preferences and desires. Christian marriages in particular can have, and since that's been the main population that I've worked with over my years, they definitely can have their own little subset of pet fears. And that's totally one of them. If we're not exactly alike, and if we're not exactly on the same page, then oh no, our oneness is being threatened and our marriage is in trouble. Whereas I have counseled couples to have separate bank accounts, not if there is, you know, betrayal trauma there or anything like that, but if one is just really meticulous with spending and the other one is feeling choked out by that. I mean, they have each other's passwords, but if they need to feel like they have more, if one needs more autonomy and one needs more control.
Like, don't take on the anxiety of the other person's impulsive spending, just manage your own money.
Right. And, you know, have a higher level conversation with the more impulsive spender. Here's what you got. And when you go through it, it's gone. You know, I mean, so there are limits here. But I've just had couples say, oh my gosh, if we were to try to do something separate with our finances, would that hurt our intimacy? And I say, how's it working for your intimacy currently? You know, let's be creative. Let's try different things. And so to help people think outside of the box about really letting people be these separate individuals that they are, and just seeing how much more connected you can be when you have named and blessed those differences.
We will have to come back and do a whole episode on that. It makes me think of the Trinity, where you have the historical definition of the Godhead, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, three separate persons and one substance, and that you can't have oneness or unity without separateness. Otherwise, it's like scrambled eggs.
Yeah, totally. That's a wonderful example.
Kelly, thank you for offering your wisdom on this idea of how the Enneagram can help couples bless and celebrate their differences. We will be back for another episode, our fifth and final episode of the Enneagram and Marriage. Thanks for listening today.
So we've wrapped up another episode of Restoring the Soul. We want you to know that Restoring the Soul is so much more than a podcast. In fact, the heart of what we have done for nearly 20 years is intensive counseling. When you can't wait months or years to get out of the rut you're in, our intensive counseling programs in Colorado allow you to experience deep change in half-day blocks over 2 weeks. To learn more, visit RestoringTheSoul.com. That's RestoringTheSoul.com.